Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another APS Portfolio Strategy call. I'm Steve Abrahams, Head of Investment Strategy here at APS, and your moderator for today. We are going to focus for the next hour or so on leveraged loans, CLOs, and the impact of LIBOR transition. And on that front, we're really about to put that transition into overdrive. On December 31, the era of new LIBOR loans and new LIBOR CLOs ends. And on January 1, the era of SOFR and other index loans and CLOs begins. For some, that transition has already started. And that is going to really create, that cutoff is going to create a huge transition. Legacy LIBOR CLOs will have a rising share of their portfolios in SOFR loans, and new SOFR CLOs will start investing in a loan market dominated by legacy LIBOR. So how CLO managers are going to handle that transition is completely up in the air, or at least to some degree it is. And then on June 30th, 2023, a lifetime away in capital markets time, LIBOR goes away and everything will have to transition to something else. We have a great panel today to explore some of the twists and turns along that path. Meredith Coffey is an SVP and head of research for the LSTA. That's the trade group that brings together issuers and investors in levered loans. She also sits on the ARC committee. Mike Kogler is managing partner of Market Alpha Advisors, a leading independent consultant on the LIBOR transition. And Adam Schwartz is the head of CLOs and structured credit here at APS. Just a couple of administrative details. We're going to try to cover the big issues over the next 30 to 40 minutes. And then we're going to open the call to questions from the audience. You should see on the right side of your webinar screen a chat box where you can write and submit questions. So you'll ask the questions there, and I'll relay them to the panel. You can really ask and submit a question at any time during the discussion, but we'll turn to the audience questions after the initial discussion wraps up. All right, let's get into it. So, Meredith, I want to start with you, and I want to make sure we know kind of exactly what's ahead. We've already started to see some new levered loans issued that are indexed to SOFR in just the last few weeks. So transition is underway, but when does the issuing of new LIBOR loans stop? And when do legacy LIBOR loans ultimately have to switch to something else?
Great. Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you for having me here today. I'm delighted to speak with you and your clients. As folks should know and probably do know, there is a bifurcated end date for U.S. dollar LIBOR. So there is different end dates between when you have to stop LIBOR origination and when your legacy LIBOR contracts, your loans or CLOs that were originated in 2019, 2020, 2021, have to switch from LIBOR to a replacement rate. So let's break that down a little bit. And let's start with new LIBOR origination. Now, new LIBOR origination must stop, full stop, by year-end 2021, according to the U.S. regulators. That is the drop-dead date. But in reality, the regulators have told the banks, and they've told us, frankly, that they want to see meaningful progress toward new non-LIBOR origination well before that drop-dead date. So they want to see new non-LIBOR loan origination in fourth quarter 2021. We have heard that. The banks have heard that. The banks have told us they're planning to comply. So we really expect to see non-LIBOR loan origination really ramp up in the coming weeks and quarters. So with the new LIBOR origination, we're there. We are going to start seeing that happening. Again, the drop dead isn't until year end, but we would expect to see this activity accelerate in the fourth quarter. Legacy contracts, loans and CLOs that were originated on LIBOR, you know, in 2019, 2020, 2021, that is a slightly different situation. And it's different between currencies, even just to make it a little more complex. For sterling, Swiss franc, yen, and euro, all LIBOR tenors will cease to be quoted, will not exist for legacy products at year-end 2021. So for those currencies, LIBOR is done both for origination and for legacy. Everything has to flip. In contrast, for U.S. dollar LIBOR, most tenors are going to continue to exist until June 30th, 2023, for legacy contracts only. So you're not allowed to use them in new contracts, but you don't have to flip your legacy contracts until June 30th, 2023. So long story short, today's existing LIBOR loans and CLOs can continue to remain on LIBOR until June 30th, 2023, although we would expect a lot of them to transition earlier. So that's really what our timeline looks like for new originations. That's ASAP. Legacy contracts flip no later than June 30th, 2023, but probably will flip as we go along between now and June 30th, 2023.
Okay. And what about the deadlines for CLOs?
Sure. I mean, the timelines, the dates are the same for CLOs. So no new LIBOR CLO issued after year-end 2021, and legacy CLO liabilities switch from LIBOR to SOFR at LIBOR cessation or no later than LIBOR cessation, June 30th, 2023. However, so those general dates are the same. However, there's a couple nuances for CLOs. So first of all, while SOFR loan origination is likely to get going in fourth quarter 2021, not sure we're going to see a ton of SOFR CLOs in fourth quarter 2021 because, as you mentioned before, there's not going to be a lot of SOFR loan assets to be put into SOFR-based CLOs, so we might not see a material ramp-up in SOFR CLO originations until, you know, early 2022. So that's for new SOFR CLO originations. For the legacy products, as folks on the call probably know, many CLOs have what's called an asset replacement trigger, which is to say that once 50% of the CLO assets switch from LIBOR to a replacement rate, the transition process may begin for CLO liability. So the transition process has been triggered by the assets going away from LIBOR. So we could see a lot of legacy CLOs transition prior to June 30th, 2023. So lots of devils in the detail.
Got it. Okay, so to do all of this, I mean, among other things, at the most basic level, the loan issuers, their agents, the investors, among other things, they have to have systems in place. Presumably, they have to have some initial thoughts about what index they're switching to. I know the push is on SOFR, but there are obviously some choices out there. So again, Meredith, kind of to you. What's your view? Are the loan issuers, the agents, the investors on a system front, are they ready for this DEIS 31 deadline? And is there real clarity on what the new index will be?
Sure. And I mean, to be honest, we at the LSTA have been working on this for going on 4 years. So we certainly hope most people are ready. We've been sort of shouting this from the rooftops for years. But let's start off with systems and are people ready? And I would say there's three parts to this. The first part is vendors. The vendors are generally ready. So the vendors have developed systems to handle almost any replacement rate. And by that, I mean any version of SOFR. There are four versions of SOFR. So any version of SOFR, they're generally ready to handle the spread adjustments on SOFR, depending on whether new SOFR contracts are written as SOFR plus spread adjustment plus margin, or SOFR with an increased margin, and they're ready to implement most credit-sensitive rates. In addition, the LSTA has developed documentation for all versions of SOFR, including term SOFR most recently, and we've worked with people to think about how credit-sensitive rates would look in loan documentation, but they would look very similar to LIBOR. So from a vendor and sort of putting product out there, that product is ready for the replacement rates. However, we have heard that not all clients have adopted the most recent release of vendor systems, and it might be the most recent release that has sort of the ability to do SOFR and all these other rates. So if people do not have the most current system release in place, they need to do that ASAP because, again, the SOFR loans are coming now. And then the third thing I would say on the operational readiness side is something relatively new but pretty critical. The other new thing folks need to know is that entities that invest in loans probably need to have a CME term SOFR license in order to invest in term SOFR loans. And this is critical because I think most people did not know this or learn this maybe earlier this week. Now, to be fair, the CME is making that term SOFR licensing available for free through 2026, but it does take work to get licensed, so we suggest that people begin ASAP. And because this is a critical aspect and a sort of late-breaking news aspect, at the LSTA, we have a bunch of information on CME terms so for licensing on the website. So that's the operational component. The second component is, what do people have an idea of what index they plan to use? That's clearly not a fully done deal in the loan space, but I would suggest that in the institutional loan market and the CLO market, the path of travel currently really seems to be around term SOFR as the main interest rate. So, people need to be ready and watch for term SOFR.
Okay. This question is to you, Mike Kogler.
Right.
You are talking to a wide range of people that are also trying to deal with this, both on the systems front and also picking the new index. What's your view? Are they ready from a system standpoint, and have they picked what the new index is going to be?
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. First of all, can everyone hear me okay? Is my sound working well?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, great. Perfect. So, first of all, to Steve, Adam, and Meredith, thanks for having me here. As Steve mentioned in the beginning, I'm Michael Kogler, Managing Principal at Market Alpha Advisors. And for the last several years, we've been spending a lot of time speaking to people, a wide range of clients, on all the issues related to the LIBOR transition. And as of right now, the issue that's front and center on everyone's mind is, what rate am I going to use after the end of this year? Because even though LIBOR has been extended, and Meredith talked about this just a few minutes ago, even though LIBOR has been extended until June 2023, in terms of banks publishing rates, the Fed and the ARC has made it very, very clear that no new issuance can occur after the end of this year if it's indexed to LIBOR. Okay, so everyone is trying to figure out what index to use. Obviously, the ARC has recommended SOFR. Just over the last 2 months or so, they endorsed term SOFR. But there are some significant differences between SOFR and LIBOR that everyone really needs to understand. So LIBOR and SOFR could not be more different. SOFR, which is the secured overnight financing rate, is based on overnight Treasury repo, which is very actively traded. I think there's close to $1 trillion a day, certainly in the high hundreds of billions that trade per day in overnight Treasury repo. It's secured by Treasuries. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. So it's a secured, a truly risk-free rate. Okay, the version of SOFR that where all the liquidity lies is the overnight rate. But the ARC recognized, I would argue, late in the process, recognized that the market, or at least a lot of market participants, would have difficulty in implementing overnight SOFR, either daily simple SOFR, which is an average, or daily compounded SOFR, and the market really had a difficult time trying to implement that rate for a whole host of reasons, which we can go into if the audience wants. So for that reason, the ARC endorsed term SOFR. Okay, so one of the big differences between overnight SOFR and LIBOR, obviously, is SOFR, the overnight rate has no term structure. LIBOR does. 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 12-month LIBOR. Okay, so you set LIBOR today, you pay it 1 month, pay it in 3 months, pay it in 6 months. You know what your interest payment is going to be. That is not the case if you use daily compounded SOFR. So, as Meredith said, we're now, or at least most of the market, is moving towards term SOFR, which does have a term structure, okay, which solves that one issue that we originally had with daily compounded SOFR. The other big problem with SOFR is it has no credit sensitivity. As I said before, it's truly a risk-free rate. Okay, so any type of credit sensitivity that you had as an investor, whatever credit risky asset you want to pick, a bank loan, a security, CMO, CLO, tranche of a CLO, whatever, you had some degree of protection if there was a credit event, okay? You do not have that with SOFR, okay? And so a perfect example is of why this is potentially a problem is what happened in March of last year with the onset of COVID. You had something of a small credit event, and the spreads between credit and risk-free rates gapped dramatically. The credit-sensitive rates that are out there, LIBOR, Ameribor, BSBY, gapped 120, 150 basis points versus where SOFR was. SOFR went to 1 basis point and sat there for 4 months. So if you own a security in that kind of a situation that's paying you, instead of LIBOR, now paying you SOFR, a rate based on the SOFR index, okay, you now have a situation where credit spreads are widening and the rate that you're receiving is going lower, okay? And actually, I believe Steve put out a research piece not too long ago talking about this very issue. So one of the big problems that the industry is facing now, because it really looks like SOFR is the rate that's being pushed onto the market by the ARC, is this lack of credit sensitivity. And it has a whole bunch of implications, which we can get into a little bit further on the call. Does that answer your question, Steve?
Yes, Mike, thank you. I appreciate that. So you're raising an interesting point, at least when it comes to some of these alternatives. But before I get into that, I just want to ask Adam something, since he's talking to the issuers and the investors on the CLO front. And I'm just curious, just to close out the operational side and the index side, do you think the CLO market is ready for this?
Thanks, Steve. So I think the story on the CLO side is very similar to what Meredith was describing on the loans themselves. I think the market and the CLOs, investors and issuers are now very aware that this change is coming. I think that the consensus is forming around using term SOFR as the replacement rate. So I think that is definitely the expectation of the market at this point. In terms of the operational setup, I think it's definitely a bit mixed. I think larger institutional investors, so large banks, insurance companies, asset managers, are definitely already set up to purchase securities that are referencing SOFR, may already be buying those securities in other securitizations or other asset classes. I think we are hearing, though, from some of the smaller institutions, maybe some smaller regional banks, smaller asset managers that might be buying only LIBOR-based instruments, that they are not quite ready yet. It's a combination of updating their own internal systems and, as Meredith mentioned, and updating to the latest versions of vendor systems. I think within the CLO space, vendor systems, trustees, rating agencies, really everyone are very much up to speed and ready for the transition in their systems, and it's just a matter of some of the smaller guys switching over. So I think the upshot really is that the market probably isn't quite ready yet to process a CLO based on SOFR, but I think certainly will be into the fourth quarter.
Okay. All right. So, Mike, you raised a very interesting point a moment ago about the switch from LIBOR, which is credit sensitive, to SOFR, which is not credit sensitive, effectively represents the rate for lending secured by risk-free treasury debt. And as you pointed out, March of 2020 would be kind of a perfect illustration of that, where LIBOR ended up going much wider and SOFR ended up going much lower, which is a behavior that investors, I suppose, are going to have to get used to. And I know you've mentioned that you've had a number of conversations with investors, potentially investors, about that and whether investors should ask for compensation for the difference in the response to the index under stress. But I want to actually ask Adam, and then I want to go to Meredith, whether in their conversations with investors, they've run into investors or issuers that are worrying about that as well. Adam?
And I think, Steve, the answer to that is really no so far. We've asked the question of a number of investors, I think, at least in the CLO space, and this topic is much broader than just CLOs, which may be part of the issue. I think investors are just not really thinking about that aspect of it and are much more focused on a topic that we'll discuss later, which is what's the spread adjustment supposed to be between SOFR and LIBOR.
Yeah. Meredith, are you hearing anything on your end about the concern around a switch from a credit-sensitive to a risk-free rate?
Sure. And I think it's important to note that I have two constituents. One is the banks and one is the institutional investor community, and I would say the responses are very different. So let's put a little context in here. Credit-sensitive rates likely have a place in the ecosystem, right? But I think the arguments are stronger for a credit-sensitive rate in a bank-originated, bank-held, high-optionality market, like a revolver. And I think the arguments for a credit-sensitive rate are probably a bit weaker in a funded sort of long-term asset class held by institutional investors. And let me explain why. So, for instance, one of the things that we looked at is we compared the correlation between LIBOR and SOFR going back to the beginning of 2000. So we're going back 20-plus years. We have thousands of observations. And what we observed is that 70% of the time, the difference between LIBOR and SOFR was between 5 and 30 basis points. And 6% of the time, it widened out to 100 basis points. So to be fair, we can absolutely look at the financial crisis as a situation where there was a huge gap between LIBOR and SOFR for a period of time, or we can look at March this year when there was a significant gap, not that big of a gap and not that long, but a significant gap as well. So there is absolutely a tail risk that we could have a market-wide event where credit risk or a credit-sensitive index would widen and SOFR would narrow, but it is a tail event. So we need to be aware of that. Now, to be very fair, lenders are giving up an option. Investors are giving up an option. They are giving up that protection when they go from a credit-sensitive rate to a risk-free rate. There's no question about that. There is a value transfer, and they should negotiate to be paid for that value. We just think that is, you know, I think we think, and regulators probably think, that institutional investors should be able to price capital markets instruments over a risk-free rate. They've been doing that on bonds for years, fixed-rate bonds for years. It's just that they need to be cognizant of that and know how to price it. The bank space, and particularly the regional bank space, I think that's a little different. But when we look at the institutional market, institutional loans, and CLOs, I think people are sophisticated enough to understand the difference between the two and negotiate appropriately. Whether they're able to price it in perfectly will depend on market technicals, but they should be aware of it and negotiate appropriately.
Okay, interesting.
Steve, can I interject something in there too?
Absolutely. I want to remind our listeners about the chat feature on the right side of your webinar screen where you can ask questions. So again, I encourage you to ask questions. So Mike, let's go to you because you seem very convinced that the transition to a risk-free rate is a challenge at the very least, and you believe there are frankly some better alternatives to SOFR. So what's your thinking there?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm not necessarily, my view is not necessarily credit-sensitive rates for everything versus SOFR, okay? I think that there's a place, and Meredith mentioned it a few minutes ago as well, I think that there's a place in the market for both. There are some situations where SOFR works very, very well, and then there are other situations where it does not work well. And by the way, there's a little bit of background noise, so I don't know if people can mute if they're not speaking, but there's some background noise. So bottom line is that, you know, credit-sensitive rates address a certain problem in the market when you have assets that are either further down the capital spectrum or lower rated credits, whatever it might be. Like, to give you a perfect example, I love using this example because it's such an extreme example, and that is the bank issued trust preferred securities that were done years ago. Those are very long dated. Some of them don't even have a maturity. Some of them are perpetuals. They pay LIBOR plus a spread. They're very low down the capital structure, right? It's preferred stock. It's below subordinated debt. During the financial crisis, when bank spreads widened, LIBOR obviously gapped. There was a flight to quality. And as an investor, you had some protection against that, okay? Because, you know, the LIBOR treasury spread gapped significantly. If you now take that type of a security and you put SOFR into it, you have none of that credit protection. And so, and Adam mentioned this before too, and that is that he said he didn't think it was necessarily an issue in the CLO market, but that people really hadn't thought through it that thoroughly, I think. And that's been our experience too in a lot of these conversations. People are still trying to grapple with, okay, now I'm moving to this risk-free world. I'm taking all this credit sensitivity out and putting a risk-free rate in. What does that mean from a pricing perspective? Okay. So as a lot of people on this call probably know, the conversion spread between SOFR and three-month LIBOR has already been set. Even though LIBOR is going to still exist until the middle of June or the end of June 2023, that spread has been set at 26 basis points. The spot spread between SOFR and LIBOR is around 8 basis points. So if you're a borrower and you're looking at this and your bank comes to you and says, okay, we're going to take your LIBOR loan and we're going to give you a SOFR loan and we're going to tack on 26 basis points on the spread, the borrower is saying, well, wait a minute, the spread's only 8 basis points. I don't think I should pay 26. I should pay closer to 8. And then on the flip side, you have investors that are looking at this and they're saying, well, I don't have any of this credit sensitivity and I don't think 26 basis points is enough. I actually need more than that. So I think you have this disconnect in the market now, and the market only has 3 months to figure this out. I think that there are a lot of people that haven't really thought through what it means moving from LIBOR and its credit sensitivity to a risk-free rate like SOFR, okay, and what that means from a pricing perspective, from a spread perspective. So I think we're going to hear more about this, and this is going to have to get sorted out in pretty short order because we only have less than three months now to figure it out because, as Meredith said, SOFR deals are going to start hitting the market soon, probably before the end of the year.
Okay, that's great. I think you have really kind of laid out in very clear terms what the tensions might be between different participants. Meredith, I know that we, in the last couple of days, have kind of touched on this briefly, and you mentioned you're already seeing a little bit of tension between borrowers and lenders in the loan space, and if I'm recalling correctly, you had a view on who's going to win that tug of war. What's your thinking there?
Sure, and I think Mike did do a good job of laying this out, and this is like something we laid out in an article a few weeks ago that really kind of looked at sort of historical norms versus where we are now, and it's absolutely playing out in the loan market now. So, you know, kind of as Mike mentioned, if you look at the normalized long-term difference between 3 month LIBOR and 3 month SOFR, that's around 20 to 30 basis points, right? But right now, you might ask, why is the spot differential between LIBOR and SOFR so low? It's because we're in a very abnormal interest rate environment. You know, interest rates are stacked right near zero right now. All rates are stacked on top of each other, so there's a little difference between them. So to Mike's point, there's about a 7 or 8 basis point difference between 3 month LIBOR and 3 month SOFR. And we're absolutely seeing a situation where borrowers, and that could be, you know, you define that as CLO equity, you could define that as corporations, where the borrowers are going to want to pay that 8 basis point differential, because why in the world would they pay an above market rate right now? If you could do LIBOR, and you still can do LIBOR right now, or you could do SOFR right now, why would you pay more for doing SOFR right now? Like the borrowers just, that is kind of a non-starter right now. And certainly in the loan space, borrowers with technicals where they are, the borrowers have more power than the lenders right now. And it is going to be a negotiation. You know, lenders, of course, would prefer to get that 20 to 30 basis points historical spread differential. And presumably, ideally, if they figured out how to value it, the value of the option of the credit sensitivity, which, again, we measured and is definitely important in very rare periods of time. But at the end of the day, this differential, the borrowers wanting to pay, you know, SOFR plus 8 basis points and the lenders wanting to receive, you know, SOFR plus 20 to 30 basis points, this is going to be a negotiation. I don't think this is going to be the market, the quote-unquote market sorting it out, but I think it will be sorted out in a series of one-on-one negotiations between borrowers and lenders. Do I think it's going to be fun? No. I think it will be messy. I do think it will be contentious for a bit of time, but I think it will be negotiated. I think that's what, you know, free market capitalism is. It's messy. It's sort of people work through issues, but at the end of the day, it will be negotiated and worked out. Will it be fun? Nope. Won't be fun at all. Will it get done? I think so.
All right. Well, so let me actually then turn to Adam, because you kind of, as a CLO structure, you play the role at times of referee between these parties. Is CLO equity and CLO debt, have they started thinking about this? Are you starting to get a sense that there can be people on different sides of this question?
Absolutely, Steve. And I think the dynamic in the CLO market is very similar to what Meredith is describing in the loan market, where CLO equity investors would argue that the adjustment should be at the 8 basis point swap rate, and then debt investors are trying to argue that it should be at the 26 basis point average historical adjustment. So the exact same dynamic and discussion will play out between equity and debt investors. I think it's going to be kind of similar messy process negotiated on a deal-by-deal basis, and the market will just probably come to some consensus as to what that adjustment should be, although it could differ on a deal-by-deal basis. I think the general thinking in the market right now seems to be that it's going to be somewhere in between the spot rate and the 26 basis points, but that is going to play out as we get closer towards the first SOFR-based CLO issuance.
Okay, so I just want to ask you one follow-up on that, and I know we probably talked about this a little bit, but, you know, Meredith mentioned this optionality. Mike kind of frames it in terms of the different behavior of these indices under stress. In your experience so far, is that optionality on the radar? People trying to figure out fair value for that?
Not really. I think people are just purely looking at it in this kind of spot and historical average perspective and not really thinking through that aspect of it.
Okay, super. Let me touch on one other question, one other kind of major theme, and that's this LIBOR sunset on June 30th, 2023. Again, I want to remind listeners you can use the chat feature to ask questions, and then we'll start taking questions off that chat stream in just a minute. But
hey, Steve, can I just ask, just say one thing real quick?
Yes.
And
sure,
for Adam, so Adam said that people aren't really thinking. So here's the question for Adam, just real quick, if you could comment on this. Do you think that investors should be thinking through this? Right? You're saying they're not really thinking through it now, but do you think that they should be?
That's a great question, Mike. I think debt investors should be thinking through that for sure, for the reasons that you mentioned. I think, again, it's broader than just CLOs, and so I think they need to be kind of thinking through that in the context of their liabilities as an institution and their overall investment portfolio. So I think the market may be the discussions may be where they are now because most of the participants involved are very narrowly focused on the CLO market. But I think institutionally, debt investors should absolutely be thinking about this at a higher level.
Yep. I would agree.
All right.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay, guys. So let me ask, I'm going to ask Meredith this question just on the loan front. In your view, do you think the loan market's really set up the legacy loan market for a smooth transition on June 30 of 2023?
So I would say two things. Individually, yes. So if we and then collectively, it would be a lot to do. So let me break this down a little bit. So there are, in the syndicated loan market, there are thousands of loans that need to transition from LIBOR to a replacement rate. In the overall market, so adding, and I'm talking about just the commercial loan market, in the overall market, you add bilaterals, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of loans that have to transition. Now, the reality is most loans, the vast majority of institutional loans, vast majority of syndicated loans, do have fallback language in them. So individually, they're okay. So for instance, if we look at, you know, according to Credit Covenant Review, if we look at the Credit Suisse Index, 80% of the loans in the index have fallback language of some form in them. The 20% that don't were generally originated prior to 2018 and have other issues that are keeping them from refinancing. So it's not, if you don't have fallback language in your document, it's often, at least in the commercial space, because you've got other issues. So again, individually, those individual loans should be fine. But we've got a collectivity problem. You know, if we see thousands or hundreds of thousands of loans transitioning via fallbacks in the middle of 2023 at the same time, that's a lot going on at the same time. So again, while individually loans should be fine, collectively that's going to be trying to push, you know, an elephant through a window, and that will be a little bit challenging. So how are people dealing with this? A lot of people are dealing with it by saying, well, frankly, I want to remediate prior to June 30th, 2023. I want to get my loans from LIBOR to a replacement prior to that. So how do you do that? I think in large part, we are hearing that a lot of people are going to, instead of waiting to fall back, a lot of people are going to refinance directly into a replacement rate between January 2022 and July 2023. For several reasons. One, the banks are going to be pushing that, right? Because they don't want to have to deal with thousands or hundreds of thousands of fallbacks at the same time. Again, it's operationally very, very burdensome. But then secondarily, from the borrower point of view, this again goes to that spot versus long-term differential between LIBOR and SOFR. If you've got hardwired fallbacks in your contracts and you fall back from LIBOR to SOFR at LIBOR cessation in June 30th, 2023, that fallback rate is 26 basis points for contracts that fall back from 3-month LIBOR to 3-month SOFR. If you refinance in the interim, you know, even assuming that 26 basis points is the right number, if you refinance in the interim, you can probably refinance at a lower spread adjustment because that's where the markets are. So there's an incentive from a negotiation perspective to refinance directly into SOFR earlier. So I think individually loans are okay. Loans borrowers, banks have done the responsible thing by getting the right fallback language into it. But again, ideally you get a lot of stuff done before June 2023 because that will be burdensome.
Okay, very interesting. How about on the CLO front? Mike, I know part of your business is to, you know, review for investors the status of their CLOs. You think they're equipped for this June 30 drop dead?
June 30, 2023?
Yep.
Yeah. So luckily, and now originally, the deadline was supposed to be the end of this year for everything, and LIBOR was supposed to stop even for legacy or stop being set even for legacy positions at the end of this year. So that date was extended. So we have an extra 18 months to deal with this problem right now. So I think that that's a reasonably long runway for people to deal with legacy positions. And as you mentioned, I have looked at thousands upon thousands of line items, you know, tranches of CLOs, syndicated bank loans, et cetera. And in most of the deals that are out there, there is pretty, especially in the loan market, right? There's fairly robust fallback language. I would say the bulk of the fallback language is amendment language that gives some flexibility to the lead agent in the deal. In consultation with the borrower and the lenders, but there is potentially going to be some noise there. As Meredith pointed out, it may make sense for borrowers to refinance their loans versus waiting for the lead agent to come in and change the benchmark rate. So I agree with Meredith. I think we're probably going to see a wave of refinancings next year in bank loans, and obviously that's going to affect CLO managers because they're going to be getting a lot of loans that are going to be refinanced into new deals that are potentially going to have a lower all-in rate. Okay, so that's something that CLO managers are going to have to really think about.
All right, just a quick one to Adam then. Quick view: are they ready? Would they be ready for the June 30, 2023 drop dead, or are there some hard cases?
So I think, as Meredith mentioned, CLOs will really have to follow the lead of the underlying loans. Most CLOs in the market, especially since so many deals have been refinanced or reset this year, most CLOs in the market have this asset replacement percentage concept where they can't transition until 50% of the assets are referencing a new rate. And so really the loan market will dictate the timing of the transition there. There are certainly legacy CLOs that that have less robust LIBOR replacement language, where it may be more at the discretion of the manager, including the discretion of whether or not to include that adjustment. There are some that have no LIBOR replacement language. So I think it's kind of similar to to the underlying loans, where the vast majority of the market will be fine, but there are certainly some cases that will be messy on a one-off basis.
And just to cover one last item, and I just want to direct this to Meredith for your quick opinion. So New York State passed a law this spring designed to help solve some of the hard cases where an existing security never anticipated a permanent end to LIBOR, and many of those hard cases would result in a fixed-rate security. And I know that there's a similar law now under consideration at the federal level. Has the New York law solved our problems, or will the federal law, if it passes, solve our problems?
Sure. Well, I'd say the federal law is better, but I think we need to put our problem into context. So what the New York State legislation and, frankly, the federal legislation address is, if you have no fallback language other than, if it says nothing or if it goes back to last quoted LIBOR, those are the contracts that are in scope for the legislation. If you have amendment fallback language or hardwired fallback language, you're not in scope for the legislation. I think some of the numbers, what CLOs are impacted by these? Generally CLOs that were originated before late 2017. And some of the estimates I've seen is that it would probably be about $30 billion of CLOs. Now, to be fair, $30 billion is a real number, but it's a small part of the $800 billion CLO market. Moreover, because those CLOs are so old at that point in time, they're certainly well within their call or well past their non-call period. They can be called if this is catastrophic. So I think the problem as a whole for the CLO market is smaller than it is for other asset classes. But then secondarily, so let's say, does the New York State law solve this? Well, yes and no. So the New York State law does solve it. What it says is if you have this like really inadequate fallback language, in effect, you would flip to the ARC recommended fallback language, which would put you into term SOFR plus spread adjustment, which is where many CLOs will be. So that's good. The thing the New York State law doesn't do, though, one, you've got to be governed by New York State law, which I think most CLOs are. But two, the thing it doesn't cover is the Trust Indenture Act, which has sort of language around it that does not permit bondholders to be impaired or injured. The New York State legislation does not address that. The federal legislation does, which is why the federal legislation is better if we can get it done. But at the end of the day, again, if you look at the entirety of the CLO market, it is a small tail of the CLO market that would be affected by this either way.
Okay, fabulous. Look, so I now want to turn and start taking some questions from the audience chat. Again, if you're listening in, there's a chat feature on the right side of your webinar screen. Please feel free to use it. It's a great opportunity to put a question in front of these excellent panelists. So I want to start with a kind of a nuts and bolts question. that I know we've discussed in the last couple of weeks, but just this is in terms of licensing term SOFR. And the question is, do investors in CLOs need to get a CME license or just the CLO manager? I guess I'm going to ask Meredith, but you can feel free to punt that to another panelist if you prefer.
Yeah. Sure.
Meredith,
well, I'd probably
is the expert on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, I think I've probably spent more time with the CME on this issue in the last few weeks than anybody else in the world. So here's the short answer is almost certainly the investor in a CLO will need in a loan or a CLO will need need to have a CME term SOFR license. And so here's the details. First of all, most people have LIBOR license with the ICE Benchmark Administration. At the manager level, you probably don't know that because that has been negotiated at the parent company level. So most people actually do have a LIBOR license. You get your LIBOR fee for Bloomberg or Refinitiv or someone like that. And most people think their contract is just with Bloomberg or Refinitiv, but in fact, you typically have an underlying licensing agreement with ICE Benchmark Administration. It's the same thing for CME term SOFR. Now, what you can do with CME term SOFR is that if you are an investor in a loan or an investor in a CLO, you can certainly be in that loan without a license. You can look at the term SOFR rate without a license directly with the CME. But what you can't do is do things like interest rate calculations, reconciliation. Any time you start doing something with the interest rate, that's where you need the license with CME. Now, to be fair, CME, you know, one of the reasons that people are getting jammed up a little bit here is that, to Mike's point, term SOFR was only just recommended. So we're kind of like moving toward using this rate that was just recommended, and we're all kind of jamming up at the endpoint. CME is working very assiduously to make sure they can get people licensed and they're not charging for it. But the expectation is, yeah, pretty much if you are an investor or a lender in a loan and you do any calculations using the rate, you need that license.
All right. So in some ways, maybe a slightly, I don't know if this is slightly related. Mike, I'm going to direct this one to you. On the call, we've talked about the spot spread between three-month LIBOR, three-month SOFR being in the neighborhood of 8 basis points, and then the ARC recommended spread being 26 basis points. So those are the two numbers we've been throwing around. So a listener is asking, would the spread adjustment, that 26 basis points, be the same for daily compounded three-month SOFR and three-month term SOFR? Mike, is that a you question?
Yeah, so the spread was actually set by ISDA, okay? Mm-hmm. And essentially, that spread is the ISDA spread was against daily compounded SOFR, okay? And actually, Meredith, you may want to chime in on this too. I don't believe if you choose term SOFR, like 3 month term SOFR, I don't necessarily think that the 26 basis, and correct me if I'm wrong, the 26 basis point spread would apply. I believe that 26 basis point spread is against daily compounded SOFR.
Sure, Mike, I'm happy to leap in here because I was involved in these consultations, if that's helpful.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Sure. So to give a little bit of context, where that 26 basis points comes from is it's really focused on contracts that fall back from LIBOR to SOFR at LIBOR cessation. That is what that 26 basis points is. What happened at the ARC level is the ARC consulted with industry repeatedly, and ISDA consulted with industry repeatedly, because you needed some spread adjustment when LIBOR ceased and people flipped from LIBOR to SOFR. So there were multiple consultations. I think ISDA consulted 3 times and the ARC consulted twice to figure out what the spread adjustment will be. And to Mike's point, it's very fair. The ISDA spread adjustment is based on SOFR compounded in arrears. The ARC went out and consulted on, should we use the ISDA spread adjustment? And they then also specifically consulted on, should we use the same spread adjustment for all forms of SOFR? So that's SOFR compounded in arrears, daily simple SOFR, SOFR compounded in advance, and term SOFR. And the market came back and said, yes, you should use the same rate for all of those different types of SOFRs. And the reason for that is those SOFRs are all extraordinarily correlated, particularly over a long period of time. Term SOFR, in fact, we are publishing a chart in the LSTA newsletter tomorrow comparing the SOFR, the term SOFR curve to the term LIBOR curve, and you will see the curves are extraordinarily different because term SOFR and term LIBOR are a very different concept. So end of the day, massive amounts, years of consultation with the market. The market came back and said, we want you to use the five-year historical median difference between LIBOR and SOFR. That was 26 basis points when it was fixed on March 5th, 2021. And the market said, we want you to use the same spread adjustment for all versions of SOFR. But again, this concept is it's for loans that are for contracts that fall back from LIBOR to SOFR. Probably way more detailed than anybody wanted, but this has been my life for 4 years.
No, that's great. And I guess the assumption that's being made is that daily compounded SOFR will track term SOFR.
Correct. I mean, term SOFR is basically the expectation of where a daily compounded rate is at the end of the period.
Yeah. In reality, the market moves, and there, you know, that may not necessarily be the case in reality, but theoretically, that's what people are assuming.
Good enough for government work.
Awesome. Yeah. That's very helpful. So another question we're getting kind of comes back to this transition that's ahead of us, where we're going into early next year, and you can imagine a new CLO that is indexed to SOFR, let's assume, trying to manage a portfolio of legacy loans predominantly indexed to LIBOR, and then over time, legacy CLO out there that are indexed to LIBOR reinvesting at a progressively more and more of their portfolio into SOFR. So there's immense basis risk. And my question to you, Adam, are CLR managers ready for that? I mean, do they know what they do? Are they prepared with the tools that they need to handle that?
That's a great question, Steve. I think the answer to that, yeah, managers are definitely aware of this basis coming and are already thinking about how they're going to manage it. I think that the timing of everything is uncertain, of course, depending on when the transitions happen and how quickly the portfolios migrate from LIBOR-based loans to SOFR-based loans. I think managers do have experience managing basis risk. I think people forget that there was a period of time when loans were indexed to both 1 month and 3 month LIBOR, and there was very significant differences between those rates. So the CLO market has already gone through a period of time where loans in the portfolios are referencing materially different base rates, even higher difference than the current spot difference between SOFR and LIBOR. So I think managers are prepared. I think there are limited tools that they have beyond just trying to manage it by balancing the portfolio into the right spread loans. But I think that's definitely on everyone's mind.
I mean, do you think it's possible that LIBOR CLOs will limit themselves to just LIBOR loans and SOFR CLOs will try to over-concentrate in SOFR?
I think that's unlikely simply because managers are not going to deviate from investing in loans that they believe in from a fundamental credit perspective. Ultimately, that's going to be the driver of the loan selection more than the basis risk, especially given the current basis. But I think over time, depending on how LIBOR and SOFR differ, that could certainly become more of an impact.
Okay. Thank you. So another question. We've referred to some of these alternative rates, credit-sensitive rates. There's BSBY, there's Ameribor, there may be others. So I know, Mike, you've been focused a lot on that. What's the status of those? I know that, among other things, SEC Chair Gensler has been very vocal lately about one of them.
Yeah, great question. I'm glad somebody brought this up. When the ARC was talking to people or trying to convince people to move to daily compounded SOFR, as I mentioned before, earlier in my comments, there was a real pushback from the marketplace because implementing daily compounded SOFR for a lot of institutions is extremely difficult, in some cases just a non-starter for people, right? So because of the lack of term structure, because of the lack of credit sensitivity, these other rates have kind of emerged. One is BSBY, another is Ameribor. ICE has their bank yield index, IHS Market has one, and then there's another index called AXI. And so when BSBY started to – BSBY and Ameribor were the two indices that really started to get traction in the market. And BSBY really started to get a lot of traction, particularly potentially being used in syndicated loans. As that started to happen, the ARC sort of came out with this SOFR first initiative and subsequently endorsed term SOFR to eliminate this structural problem between the daily compounding and the term SOFR rate. Okay, so that's one thing. Since that happened, the regulators, and in particular Gary Gensler, have been very vehemently opposed, and actually Andrew Bailey from the FCA as well, from the Bank of England as well, came out very aggressively against BSBY. And just this past Monday, Gary Gensler made comments where he essentially said that BSBY might not even be IOSCO compliant. That basically put a stake in the heart of BSBY, at least for the time being, okay? However, the other credit-sensitive rates are still in play. And in particular, Ameribor now seems to be taking the lead. They have some traction. They just made an announcement yesterday that they are going to be the one of the world's first carbon neutral indices. So that's another potential reason why you could use Ameribor. So, you know, it remains to be seen as to which of these indices, if any, get traction in the market. But, you know, Meredith said it before. My belief is I do think that there's a place for credit sensitive rates in certain use cases in the market. Do I think it should completely dominate SOFR and replace SOFR? No. But could credit sensitive rates make up 10, 15, 20% of the market? I would say yes. So right now it seems like the index that is in the lead is Ameribor because of, you know, in large part because of Gensler's comments on Monday. The scuttlebutt in terms of my conversations this week in the aftermath of that SOFR symposium is no one wants to touch BSBY with a 10-foot pole right now, because if it's not IOSCO compliant, it's a non-starter. And it turns out Gary Gensler is actually on the board of IOSCO as well. So, you know, maybe BSBY will be resurrected down the road. I don't know. But right now, I think if you want to use a credit-sensitive rate, you know, you might want to take a look at Ameribor. That's just my view.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Again, we're getting a couple of quick questions here at the end. Some basic blocking and tackling. The one question, maybe Meredith, you know the answer to this. Is there any online source for learning more about CME licensing for term SOFR? In other words, where could somebody go to get plugged in on that?
Sure. I mean, they do have a website. They do publish FAQs. We are actually, and that wasn't meant to be a softball to me, but what the hell, I'll hit the softball. So on the LSTA website, we've actually posted a link to a PDF CME put together for us that has a link to their licensing agreement, their FAQs on licensing, their methodology on term SOFR, the fee list for licensing term SOFR, which, by the way, is zero for cash products until 2026, as well as sort of a link to people that can answer questions. So that's on the LSTA website. I'm sure it's on the CME website, but I'm not sure exactly where. And then the other thing I would flag is the LSTA is actually We're doing a Zoom cast with CME tomorrow afternoon, which we're going to post on Monday, which is really them talking through all the processes of getting a CME term SOFR license. So we are a resource. And again, I know you weren't playing a softball there, but we've been very focused on, by the way, we're not getting any money. We're not getting a percentage of that $0 that they're earning from SOFR. We do think it's very important that people get licensed, so we're trying to put all those resources out there.
All right, tremendous. And then I'm looking at a question here asking about a resource, online or otherwise, to further explain the essential differences between term LIBOR structure versus term SOFR. And Meredith, I assume the correct answer is for them to look for your newsletter tomorrow.
Yeah, we're definitely going into that tomorrow. And then we also put out a piece about 4 weeks ago that really dug into the spread adjustment and why it is where it is, and then how people could think about pricing new SOFR assets.
Okay, and then I just want kind of a quick, almost a yes or no for this last question, which I'll call a Hope Springs Eternal question. Is there a chance that the deadline of June 30, 2023 could be extended? What probability would you assign to that, Meredith?
Very low probability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mike?
Yeah, I would agree with Meredith. I mean, nothing. There's no certainties in this world except, I guess, death and taxes. No, very, very low probability, low single digits.
Okay, fabulous. I'm going to exclude Adam from this because he's focused on other things. But at this point, I appreciate everybody. We're out of time today, but I want to thank our panelists again, Meredith Coffey of LSTA, Mike Kogler of Market Alpha Advisors, Adam Schwartz, my colleague at Amherst Pierpont. It's been a great discussion. To our listeners, we should have a recording available in the next day or so. Watch your email. We'll include the link. I'm Steve Abrahams. Thanks for listening today. Keep an eye out for the APS strategy that brings you these calls and many other things every week. Thanks again, and have a great afternoon.